The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Headquarters to all units. Headquarters to all units. All units stand by for On Patrol with the PPD, airing now on WTBR 89.7 FM.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to another new episode of On Patrol with the PPD here on WTBR 89.7 FM, Pittsfield Community Radio, simulcast on Pittsfield Community Television. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention also available on all of your popular podcast platforms. Today is Friday, May 26, 2023. My name is Mike Wynn. I am the host and one of the producers of this sometimes weekly radio show. I'm also the chief of police here in the city of Pittsfield, at least for the next several weeks. I'm joined in studio this morning by Dave Cachet, who's running the board for us this morning.
Hello.
And also live guests in studio, Officer Darren Derby and his partner, Officer Winston. They haven't been here for a while.
I like it that you consider me a guest. Not a co-host.
You got to show up to be a co-host. We'll talk about that. But before we do, let's get a check of the weather and maybe talk about some news articles.
Here is your WTBR forecast from BerkshireWeather.com for Friday, May 26. Greetings. Today, sunny with a high of 68. Tonight, clear with a low of 40. Tomorrow, sunny with a high of 76. That's your latest WTBR forecast. For more weather forecast information, go to BerkshireWeather.com. I'm Dan Klein from WTBR, and I hope you all have an amazing day. Cheers, everyone!
Thanks to Jacob for that amazing weather report. I think on the news front, I'm having a little technical difficulty with my cell phone. So just as far as regular news items, the only one I really want to hit on is sentences are starting to come down for the organizers of the January 6th insurrection. And the sentences are heavy. They're coming down heavy. 18 years against the founder of the Oath Keepers. And so, you know, the Justice Department and the feds are taking it seriously, and those sentences reflect that. The only other thing I kind of want to mention news-related is special events season is upon us. And I know Cultural Pittsfield show just wrapped up. They were talking about a bunch of those events. But Thursday is back. I haven't seen the paperwork yet, but I'm pretty sure Live on the Lake is coming. You know, details abound, and just, you know, I, from the police department's point of view, just ask, when those events are going on, just slow down, pay attention. You know, there's changes in traffic patterns and kids in and around the roadways. And so just, you know, be safe and be respectful. And we'll leave that at that. So Officer Derby is in studio this morning.
It's a rare thing.
It's been apparently a while. Well, the irony is that when we pulled you from patrol and took you out of calls for service, I kind of anticipated that you'd be more available on Friday mornings, and the reality was you became less available on Friday mornings.
Yeah,
because there's just so much other stuff demanding attention. But I wanted to start kind of just with the safety officer aspects as we're coming to the end of the school year. So you've been in the schools, kind of supporting the DARE program, attending DARE graduations, continuing to do your school visits, but you've kind of also now taken a role as part of the safety and assessment team as well.
Yeah, which wasn't really something that I don't know if I anticipated it, but you know, I had thought about it, but you know, there's a lot of things that come into that. And one thing that I'm not really used to is the meetings.
Right.
I'm kind of like just, I like to show up and, you know, figure things out. I'm not really the administrative kind of guy. So sitting through meetings is like, oh my gosh.
Well, I'm gonna say something that's gonna come off as critical. I don't intend it to be critical.
That's all right.
And don't get me wrong. In the police department, we have a lot of meetings. But dealing with the school district is very, very different. They have meetings to schedule meetings, right? And everything has to be reached by consensus. And so, you know, our counterpart, your counterpart in the school district, Eric Lamoureux, he's a great guy. I love him to death. He's my friend. But like we circulate these documents. We're trying to change them. We're looking at an MOU. It'll go around 17 different times. It's like, somebody just signed this thing, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. You know, we can, if we find a spelling error or a grammar error, we can fix that later. We got the intent, put it in place. We're used to making decisions under pressure in a crisis. They don't operate under that model. I joke at home because it's very similar out at the college.
Yeah. You've been in this job long enough, and I'm going on 22 years, and you just become used to not shortened meetings, but things happening just a tad bit quicker.
Yeah.
So to sit in a meeting, and again, you know, to sit in a meeting and say, okay, you know, geez, hey, let's have another meeting. I'm like, oh my gosh, like, I thought we figured this out.
Yeah, somebody make a decision.
But, you know, and I get it. Everything is, you know, it's very fluid, you know, with certain things that are happening around the country. You know, we in law enforcement, as you know, we see things much, much differently. And, you know, we kind of, I don't know, I think we more, we try to put things more simpler, I guess you could say. You know, just, it's not as complicated. Hey, here's what we do. Here's right. what we're going to do. But with the school system and any other, you know, private sector, you know, stuff like that, they have to, you know, they think about things and then they change it and then they change it and change it. So.
Well, I think part of it is we're educated and trained in different planning processes. And it's not just when we talk to the school district, because I've had very similar conversations, as you said, with private industry, other municipal departments. We come at things from what is the solution, right? I'm not going to say that, let's say school violence, right? I'm not going to say that's an easy problem to tackle, but there is a simple solution. Lock the school down, put large standoff distances in place. Don't let anybody in on the campus or around the school that's not authorized to be there. Check every person that goes in when they go through the door. That is a simple solution. It's not a practical solution, and it's not a solution any district wants to implement. Okay. So we look at it from take that solution and peel back layers until we get to a solution that's livable.
What's reasonable?
Right. What can everybody live
correct.
With? They look at it from, this is what we are now. What can we implement from where we are to get to a solution that's safe? They're two opposite planning practices.
Yeah, and I think that one of the most frustrating parts is, again, you kind of just hit the nail on the head. Was, you know, hey, well, here's a solution, right? From the police standpoint, we're problem solvers. Here's how we think that we can solve this based on our training and knowledge and, you know, other departments and how they've done things. But then you look at it on a school's point, you know, you have the administrative, you know, side of things. You have the legality side of things. You have, the schedule side of things. You know, how do we continue the day's schedule without interrupting the flow of, you know, people coming in and out? And, you know, people kind of point to us all the time or gravitate to us and say, well, geez, you know, what do the police think? How do you think? And then we give them an answer, and then it's like, oh, gosh, yeah, we can't do that. I'm like, well, what do you mean you can't do that? You're now asking us to help you solve a problem. We're giving you what we think would work. But I kind of look at it as like this, is when I went to the DARE school, I'm not a teacher. So you had to take the cop, put that aside, and then put the teacher in me, and I'm like, okay, hey, geez, this is a little different. So I commend the teachers and those in the education part, but at the same time, I don't know. So there's some things that really bother me when I go into schools, but I understand that that's how they do things. You know, so it's
all right. So let's move on from safety and assessment. So spring is here.
Yeah,
spring means a couple of different things from the office of the safety officer.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the coolest things that it means for PPD is the return of Operation Copsicle.
Oh, gosh.
Copsicle 1.
It's been out four times this week already.
I was in Springfield.
When I leave here, it's got to go to Taconic for their senior day.
So. I was in Springfield yesterday morning for the services for fallen U.S. Marshal John Gibbons, my friend and brother. And there was a contingent of officers from UMass who were there, and they were so expressive and grateful for the opportunity to borrow Operation Copsicle and take it down. And they couldn't, they were shocked and amazed at how impactful frozen treats are for college students.
Yeah. You know, and I think it's, you know, and that goes the same across the board is, you know, when we have these interactions, these quick, you know, hey, how are you? Thanks. You know, can I have one, please? And thank you. Even, you know, with the adults, it's like they just kind of forget about what's going on in the world around them. And they're like, oh, my gosh, this is so nice. You know, and it's really the cost. It costs nothing to the city to buy these treats. We know that. This is all fundraising stuff. And, it, you know, I think it's the impact is you can't really put a number to it. Except for when you go to events, you know, like you did yesterday, out of town, out of the area, you know, an hour away, and there's departments that have come to you and said, hey, you know, geez, we can't thank you enough for this. I think that's really, you know, in getting to that point, Chicopee now has theirs because they borrowed ours enough and they said, hey, we're going to go have one.
Yeah.
So it's...
So what you were just talking about, like, you know, to take the ice cream truck out into the community. And we have these non-law enforcement interactions with residents, adults, and children, and it's a positive interaction. It's an opportunity to see people outside of calls for service and for them to see officers and humanize them. But there's a model, a paradigm that I use a lot in leadership trainings, and I've been using it for years, but all other leadership instructors that I follow and look at their stuff, they describe it a little bit differently. And it doesn't just apply to leadership. It just, you know, well, it life is leadership, but it applies to just human interactions. And it's this idea of relationship capital, right? And so every relationship you have, you know, a bank account. And you're looking to make deposits in that account so that when something happens that's negative and you have to make a withdrawal from that account, you still have a positive balance. And that's what Operation Copsicle is. It's deposits in these relationship bank accounts. You know, just a minor deposit here, a minor deposit there, but those deposits accumulate and they accrue interest over time. And then, you know, God forbid, we have a situation in the community where we have an interaction that is less than ideal. We make a withdrawal, but we're still left with a positive balance.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, and again, for a while, I think all departments around the country kind of not had to get away, but kind of shifted their goals maybe for a little bit because of certain things that are happening in the communities, happening across the world. You know, community policing, this isn't the first thing we've ever heard of. You know, this isn't the first time we've seen this. You know, it was big in the 90s, you know, the 80s, the 90s. And then, you know, I think, you touched on it before. The funds were there. We could, you know, the departments could supply officers to all these events. And then 9/11 happens, and then those, you know, funds get shifted to, you know, other priorities.
But it goes beyond that, and we've talked in previous episodes. I started my employment with the city in community policing. I was not hired as a police officer. I was hired as a grant manager to manage community policing grants, and I did that for not quite 2 years before I was given the opportunity to go to the academy. Taking the test and going to the academy was actually, well, going to the academy was a personal decision. Taking the test was an assigned duty by Chief Lee because he wanted to know why so few residents, and particularly residents of color, were taking, but more importantly, passing the exam. And so he wanted somebody to take a look at the exam objectively and say, what is it about this exam that's driving people away? And so I took it, and as a result, you know, it was placed on the list, and then it decided, okay, you know, I've got this opportunity. Because I had no intention in 93, 94, 95 of becoming a cop. So I've spent my entire career in community policing, and it wasn't until the last 3 years that I figured out and realized that we've done a really bad job as a profession about describing and defining community policing. Because, you know, we go to these community meetings after large scale events and everybody's like, community policing, the police department, community policing. I was like, wait a minute, time out. The first word in community policing is community. You can't look at us and say, what are you doing about community policing? It's about community. It takes our residents to participate for it to be true community policing. And there's all kinds of examples of things that we do that are true community policing. But that's not RAD, right? RAD mm-hmm. is a law enforcement program that we offer to the community. Mm-hmm. It is Neighborhood Watch. Neighborhood Watch is the community organizing around the fault lines and fracture lines that they identify as a neighborhood and telling us what they want to do to work in partnership to provide information to us and receive information from us. And so there isn't any community policing without community.
Correct. So, yeah, you know, and you can't say that enough, you know. And, you know, like you said, I can, you know, touch on a couple of events that we've done, Cones with a Cop. Actually, I'm going to plan one prior to your exit. I'm just trying to figure out the right date in June. But we'll have it again at the, you know, hopefully at the Common. And, you know, it's a community policing event, but you know the community is listening when you see the hundreds of kids that come out
right.
From all the daycare centers and whatnot.
Right. So I just got to throw out here that I just found out yesterday that Baby G is moving from the infant room to the toddler room at daycare,
which
means he can start going out in the community on the little wagon. So I don't know who his new teacher is going to be, but we got to get them the date of Cone with a Cop.
So we'll figure that out, and I'm be interesting to see what Winston does. So if I have him in the car and I know that G is out, you know, wherever they are, and I'll just have him get out of the car and walk around. I'm going to see if he can smell him.
Oh, definitely.
You know, and he'll
particularly if he's got a dirty diaper.
Yeah. Because I was talking to you last week, and I'm like, hey, Mike. By the way, I'm like, you guys don't feed the dog or anything, do you? And he's like, no, we don't feed the dog, but Gabe does.
Yeah.
So I'm like, wait, why is the dog begging? He's never begging. And for those of you who are just listening, so we co-parent, the chief and I, and you know that his bride and their family has weekend custody. Heather and I have the weekday custody, and totally two different atmospheres when it comes to the households. There's babies and dogs in one house, and just two people in another.
Yeah.
So when he's at our house,
and a cat,
yes, that looks just like him. But when he's at our house, you don't even know he's there. Like he's that. This is how he is at our house,
yeah.
Like just laying down. But the result of Operation Copsicle was seeing how, like Boston PD, and we've touched on this, who has Operation Hoodsy Cup, Chelsea PD has their own ice cream, to just see the comments and see the community response to those.
Yeah.
And again, you know, it's those small interactions, and I've said it 100 times. It's the, hey, you know, how are you? Would you like an ice cream? It's putting a name behind the uniform, but putting the humanity behind the uniform.
Exactly.
It's so much fun. It's you know, the other day I went to the Crescent Creamer who helps us out, and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to get some specialty ice cream, and it was gone within like a half hour. So well,
the other thing, and we don't really talk about this too much. So one of the things that is frustrated me, and it's kind of something I regret not having been able to make more progress on, is for my entire career, we've always kind of struggled with how the department invites in or interacts with our larger family units, right? So through the family support group or the family readiness stuff. And at different stages, you know, we've had different partners or spouses come in and kind of run with that, and it ebbs and flows. But one of the things that's the coolest about Operation Copsicle is it's not always cops on the truck, right? And it, you know, it's Heather and her sister, and depending on who's out there, we'll have other family members come. It's some of the the officers' kids.
Yeah.
And so it really has become kind of a family function. And that's heartening.
Yeah, you know, and you know, it's still a work in progress to expand our officers who man it. You know, it's still, and again, you know, the community policing part of things, when you're interacting on a different level, right, you really have zero authority, right? So when you're out there, you're not taking charge of anything. You're just out there kind of, you're putting on a smile and just saying, hey, how are you? There's no thought process when you're having these. So you don't have to have a solution for whatever problem that you're responding to. And it's having those intimate conversations with people when they start asking you personal questions.
Yeah.
That's not easy for a lot of people to participate in, especially when you're in uniform or you've become accustomed to kind of protecting your personal life. So you become vulnerable, and it's not easy.
But I think it's important for our officers to know that that's also not essential. Right.
Correct.
You can be really, really good at community policing and have positive interactions in a non-enforcement way and not expose details of your personal life.
Absolutely. You know, absolutely.
I spent the vast majority of my career just having a response. I don't talk about that at work. Right. I'm sorry. There's just certain aspects I don't discuss
and
at work.
The only reason why it's really become part of who I am and what I do is because Heather's always with me.
Right.
So it's kind of impossible to say, oh, how's Heather? And I'm like, how do you know Heather?
Yeah.
You know, so it's, you know, with social media and with her being, I mean, this is now, I think we're going on my 11th year with direct community policing, as I've called it, where I've really kind of gotten out of my cruiser. And, you know, with that, I kind of just said, hey, you know, like this is how I would want someone to be an officer in my neighborhood.
Right.
It's not for everybody, especially when you go to the grocery store and people, oh, where's the wife? You know, and I'm like, well, you know, like, oh my gosh. But, you know, I'm okay with that. But, you know, I know there's other officers that I'm working with diligently that are just like, yeah, you know, I'll do the ice cream truck, but, you know, not without you. And I'm like, oh, gosh, you know, and they're like, well, I don't know how to do, but baby steps, baby steps.
Well, there's no training for this in the academy.
No, right? No.
And nothing that we're talking about so far is rocket science, and we didn't invent any, like Operation Cop School, that came direct from Boston PD.
Mm-hmm.
But I was in a law enforcement forum recently, within the last couple of weeks, and I was shocked. Because there was a Midwest police department that was trying to figure out how to implement essentially shop with a cop. And I'm reading this forum. I'm like, you don't have to figure this out. There are thousands of examples of how to implement this program, including ours. You could just send us an email and we'd tell you exactly what we do. And again, not something we created, why reinvent the wheel. But, you know, that one in particular, well, actually, you just said, you know, Operation Copsicle, we're dependent on a local community partner. Shop with a cop, we are entirely dependent on community partners, right? We could not do that without the support of Walmart, the BRTA, and the school district. Right? That is a pure joint operation. The weird part about that one is we get to have almost all the fun.
Yeah, you know, you touched a little bit on that was when you're talking and you're seeing these other departments kind of struggling. And they'll call me, and I still get emails from around the country, you know, like, hey, you know, we saw this on Facebook, or, you know, we follow you, and how did you do this? And when you tell them, say, hey, listen, you know, and I don't always want to direct people to Walmart,
right?
But Walmart, you know,
they're a good partner.
Is a terrific partner when it comes to law enforcement.
Yeah.
And I just say, hey, you got a Walmart in there? Yep. Go look for your community liaison. This is what you do. This is the webpage that you go on. Oh, wow, that's a lot. Do you have a nonprofit? Is your, you know, association? This is all you got to apply for, and you're going to get money. Yeah. And you're like, are you serious? I'm like, that's it. And then I'll get a follow-up email maybe a month or two, even a year later. Hey, thanks. I just want to let you know we're now getting bicycles. We're getting this. And sometimes it's, you know, like you said, it's I can't really think a lot about it.
Yeah, I'm surprised that I haven't thought about this before. But what we really should do is memorialize this conversation in a document and then just make that document available on our website.
Yeah.
Right? If you're a police department that you want to get involved in this type of stuff, here's a go-by. Do this.
Yeah. Because, you know, again, people will ask me, you know, policy and procedure with a dog.
Right.
Or, hey, what's the policy procedure for the Copsicle? When can it go out? Who can it go to? Who can man it? You know, stuff like that. So I'm constantly, I have a couple of saved documents when it comes to, hey, here's how we fundraised for the Copsicle truck. Here's where the logos, this is where they come into play. Here's how I got all the donations. You know, and departments are just like, wow, that's a lot of work. I'm like, well, it's already written out for you.
Right.
So just have at it. But
it's work up front.
Yeah.
But it's easily sustainable.
Well, it's work up front if you don't have those community relationships and partnerships set in place
already.
So, you know, like I said, Chicopee, is they're huge into community policing. They've got a lot of crazy events that are directly involved with their students. When I said, hey, listen, just go to Walmart. And they're like, really? I'm like, yeah, just go to Walmart. Just ask them. Just go to Walmart. They were floored. They couldn't believe it. So, you know, not every agency, you know, has the ability to go to a Walmart, but you have Dick's Sporting Goods will also do things. But even so, we've reached out to Walmarts in New York State when we needed stuff for Special Olympics, and they were more than happy to donate because nobody's asked them.
Right.
So, but, yeah.
And to circle back off of that before we go to a station break, and we're talking about some large multinational, you know, corporations, but don't forget your local partners, right? Crescent Creamery is a local partner.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And we've had great success with many, like the three out of the last six Coffee with a Cop have been at Currency Coffee.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of fun Coffee with the Cops, but that is by far my favorite venue, right?
Yeah.
It's
comfortable.
It's comfortable. It's kitschy.
Yeah.
We get a completely different collection of people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, local partners, small business partners are valuable as well.
Yeah, I apologize. I didn't touch on that, but yeah. And they're always willing to. So, you know, working with a story yesterday, gentleman says, hey, my son's, you know, graduating. He's got an IEP program. He's not at Pittsfield High. He's at another school, but wants is graduating. And I've seen this kid from here in Dower Square kind of grow up. And I said, oh, gosh. And he's like, yeah. He's like, we went to Steve Valenti's to get a tux. And I'm like, a tux? A tux for graduation? He's like, yeah, he is so proud. It's a once-in-a-lifetime moment. I'm like, okay. Well, tux it is. And he said, but, you know, we're behind on bills. We're this, that, and a third. And you know, it's $300. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. Like, I know we're, you know, like, what am I going to do? Right? So I just, hopefully we can work something out, if not with Steve's, with Tux Express or somebody. But no doubt we'll end up, you know, helping the family out as a police department and just making the kid's day, you know. And it's just, but again, we couldn't do that with Walmart, but we can do it with local organizations. So as long as, you know, and people, you know, of course I'm going to say this and people are going to listen. We're like, okay, I'm going to ask them for this and that. And, you know, unfortunately we can't do it all, but just being at the right place at the right time.
But also having those established relationships.
And knowing the struggles that a certain family goes through. So it's.
Because I don't think you know this. So recently we had interaction with the management group of a local housing unit. I don't want to share it. I don't want to give any details. And we found out it was supposed to be a safety and security meeting, but we found out during that meeting that they had recently gone through multiple days without power, or hadn't gotten through the emergency management stuff, and as a result there was some food loss. And very quickly you were able to leverage some connections to get some things to kind of alleviate some of that.
Yep.
Well, our co-responders in mental health unit have been doing follow-ups based on that meeting. And they went to Guido's last week and got a ton of fruit and vegetables.
The co-responders did?
Yeah. For that same housing unit.
That's crazy.
So
they've been following up with some of the families and stuff. And
they've been having office hours.
But again, you know, you're talking about community partners, United Way. I mean, that was huge. They made a lot of things happen for that organization. But, you know, we aren't equipped, but we are equipped to handle a lot of the situations like that, when, you know, that should have been, what did you call it?
Emergency management.
Right. So that should have, there should have been a command. There should have been something going on there with the amount of families and without power and food. And, you know, they, if they had, if we had known about it at the time that it happened, I'm sure that we had more than enough connections with not just us, but with United Way, and to make it where nobody would have had to worry. But thankfully, they did okay.
All right, we've got a break for station identification, another check of the weather, and some PSAs, and then we're going to talk about some of Officer Derby's social media campaigns.
We're going to ask you some questions. That's what we're going to do.
Whoa, like, what exactly is happening here?
89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield. Here is your WTBR forecast from BerkshireWeather.com for Friday, May 26th. Greetings. Today, sunny with a high of 68. Tonight, clear with a low of 40. Tomorrow, sunny with a high of 76. That's your latest WTBR forecast. For more weather forecast information, go to BerkshireWeather.com. I'm Cam Klein from WTBR, and I hope you all have an amazing day. Cheers, everyone!
Do you have a favorite show on WTBR-FM? Did you miss the last episode? We've got good news for you. Most of our shows are now available on podcast. You can subscribe to your favorite and have the latest episode downloaded to your device automatically on Apple, Google, Amazon Music, Stitcher, or Overcast. Go to WTBRFM.com/podcasting and find out more today. WTBRFM, for the love of radio.
Hi, this is Sergeant Mark Madalena with the Pittsfield Police Department. We all have busy lives, and we're in a hurry to get to where we need to be. While driving, people are eating, drinking, talking, putting on makeup, doing their hair, checking social media, texting each other, all while the dog sits on their lap. The result is running red lights, stop signs, speeding, and finally crashing. Distracted driving is illegal. You can be ticketed or criminally charged. Please share the road and pay attention. Let's make sure everyone gets where they want to go safely. This message is brought to you by the Pittsfield Police Department in cooperation with WTBR-FM.
We all know WTBR is great to listen to on 89.7 FM, but did you know that you can listen to WTBR just about anywhere? We've got a web stream, and it's easy to use. Go to WTBRFM.com on your computer and click play. You can use the TuneIn app on your smartphone and connect it to your car's sound system. Or you can use your smart speaker. Just say, Alexa, play WTBRFM, and there's your community radio station. WTBR, for the love of radio.
Hey, man, is that Freedom Rock?
Yeah, man.
WTBR.
Well, turn it up, man.
Welcome back to another new episode of On Patrol with the PPD here on WTBR 89.7 FM, Pittsfield Community Radio, simulcast on Pittsfield Community Television, and available on all of your popular podcast platforms. If you're just tuning in, we're speaking this morning with Safety Officer, Officer Darren Derby. He's joined in studio this morning by his...
amazingly comfortable.
Less than energetic partner, Officer Winston. Yeah. You're very comfort dog.
Oh, gosh.
And we're fortunate to have Dave joining us on the board this morning. Thanks, Dave.
No problem. Thank you.
So we've been talking about community policing and community engagement, particularly focusing some attention on some relationship deposits and some of the, you know, just sheer joy we get from some of these. But I want to talk about a couple emails that I saw you send out recently. So you sent out an email, I think it was yesterday, the Westside Riverside Park is having an event this week, right? And
tomorrow.
You were looking for partners from the community engagement team to come. Did you get some responses?
We'll talk afterwards.
I'll take that as a no.
I was gonna say, that sounds promising.
Yeah.
It's you know, weekends are hard.
Are they otherwise detailed already?
Yeah, they're hard. It's hard to, you know, but we'll be. I'm confident we'll have some people.
So the other email you sent out recently, and I was really pleased to see this because this is something that I've been keeping an eye on for a while, and I was adverse to tagging somebody with an additional responsibility for something was just more of a curiosity of mine, but you kind of found your way to it. Was I saw a request, I think it was to Intel and IT, to get some weekly stats to kind of to put up a weekly summary.
Yeah.
And I know you said, I think it was Adams or North Adams.
Adams does it. Williamstown, Cheshire.
Dartmouth PD has been doing it for years, and they do it really, really well.
I will steal theirs.
They have a template for the graphic, and it's just, you know, it's like six or seven calls for service, just a count, boom. I think they post it on Sunday morning.
Yeah, and it's just, it's something where people can, oh my gosh, wow, that, you know, they were busy this week. You know, you can see that, you know, it's... You know, I think it's, you know, we've talked about this before. It's part of that transparency thing. It's we want people to know, like, what we're doing.
And just to be clear, so in that email, you referenced our open data portal, which we've talked about obliquely on previous episodes, but never in any detail. All of that information is readily available on our website through our open data portal. But if you're not, if you're not a statistician or a numbers geek, it's a little cumbersome and wieldy. The social media weekly update, it's just a status report. It's boom, a single image. It's got that information on it. And
I mean, people, you know, and I can see over the years just from kind of, I won't say I'm an expert in social media, but kind of understood a lot of the algorithms and seeing the analytics over the years of videos and posts, people's attention span is... really 15 seconds. And that's max right now. It used to be 1 minute videos, where now it's 30 second. Now it's closer to 15 second videos. So when we want people, you know, as a government agency, hey, here's all our stats and this is where you can go. That's not good enough anymore.
Right.
And you really need just to kind of just a snapshot. And when everybody's, I shouldn't say everybody, even all the way up to 89 years old, are using social media, Facebook or Instagram and whatever else it is now, that's where they're getting a lot of their news from. And they don't,
just to be clear, is not a best practice.
No, right? It's
not. You
need
to go to sources.
It's not. But if that's where they're getting it from, then it would only be our best judgment to say, hey, you know what? Then we have to change just a few things.
We have to be in that environment.
Correct. Especially if we want to, you know, we want to be at the top of our game and people to go, okay, hey, geez, you know, and it's similar to what you said, when you want to cash in those relationship times and say, well, geez, you know, like, oh, well, usually they post something. Well, they haven't posted anything. It'd be nice, you know, and again, we tried this a few years ago with supervisor level, where, you know, we started using Twitter when we're closing down roads. Unfortunately, Twitter, especially out in the east or in the western part of the state, hasn't really taken off as well as, you know, the eastern part of the state. And, you know, some supervisors aren't as tech savvy, you know, and it just becomes, sometimes it's cumbersome.
And it's an additional burden on the commander during the. Yeah. So we, I don't even remember what we were on. I think it was one. It was something that triggered a potential school lockdown, and I happened to be in and around the station as it was spinning up, and I jumped on secure communications and I sent the scene commander. I was like, "Do you have the bandwidth to do this, or do you want us to do it?" Because it's, you know, you got to step back from the scene, take a picture, open up the app. It's not seamless.
Mm-hmm.
And in that particular case, they were wrapping it up and standing down before I made that ask. We didn't, so it's not always timely, right? We've had a couple fairly high profile incidents in the last couple months that haven't really made the news, honestly, because patrol did such a good job that we we took the road over, we set the perimeter, we cleared the scene, and we were out.
Mm-hmm. Before Ben Garber could make it there.
Yeah. Before anybody could make it there, right? I remember it was the one on Linden Street when we shut down the road because we had contained the house. But yeah, that thing was resolved before we had the opportunity to implement the media plan.
Yeah. I mean, so I was there. You know, we set up our command post, and within probably, I would say, 20 minutes – We knew that the subject wasn't there. Yeah. We knew that, you know, he might have been somewhere else. The phone was already pinged. We made contact with the occupant in the apartment.
Got them to come out.
And believe it or not, I still have contact with that person today, doing well. And, you know, I think it was just one of those days.
Everybody has bad days.
We all have bad days.
Everybody has bad days. And unfortunately, for some people, that bad day is going to be interpreted by somebody, usually a third party, as a crisis, and their call is going to be to us, and then, you know, your bad day is going to become our bad day, and we got to try to make it a better day.
I gave somebody a really bad day the other day. Really bad day.
So for the last couple of weeks, I've been conducting the in-service training rotations to cover for Officer Gaynor, because she had other training commitments. And so I was running the live-action scenarios related to some of the persons in crisis and de-escalation. And I was really, really pleased and proud to see the – and it's a scenario, right? It's not an actual interaction. But it was scripted based on some interactions we've had with people in the community. Just the degree of compassion and empathy that our officers chose to start with. And they know, because it's recognition prime decision making. When we tell you change the cartridges on your taser out for the training cartridges, you pretty much can anticipate there's a good chance you're going to be tasing someone in the near future. That's not always the case. Sometimes, you know, we throw a surprise where the situation does not escalate. But they were going into this knowing that there was a high potential that they were going to need to use force. And to a person, they all came in really inquisitive. Mm-hmm. How can we help you? We want to make this a better day. Sergeant Madalena should be nominated for an Oscar because he wasn't having it.
He's always good.
He got tased a lot.
Oh, gosh.
They're not live taser applications. Yeah. There's no charge on these.
He hit me with whatever he had in his hand. The drumsticks. So
did he throw it at you?
Oh yeah. And it was a little delayed reaction. Yeah. But I was listening to Nikki yell at me, so I was nervous.
Yeah.
But I had touched on, I gave somebody a bad day the other day. So I tend to like to clean out the refrigerator.
Oh my God. This email thread.
I our refrigerator is just at the station. It's our community refrigerator, and it tends to get a little dirty, like any workplace, you know, if nobody's watching it. And there was absolutely no room in the fridge. And I looked around and I'm like, okay, what is this? And I'm making a mental note. That was in there last week. Okay. Oh, that's got mold on it. They all got mold on it. Okay. So I just grabbed a whole handful of these same containers and threw them away. I'm like, okay, now we're good. And there was a witness. And I said, what is that smell? I'm like, look at it. It's got mold on it. Okay. So then just a short time later, a nice email came out. I'm just wondering, I put my steak and green beans in there, and they didn't call me out, but they, you know, they made reference
yes,
to
they
somebody.
Did. Yes, they did.
So I must have thrown it away. I didn't do it intentional. It was in with a pile of other stuff. So I told him I owe him a steak, and I'm going to have him cut it into like a heart shape, and I will present it to him nicely cooked. So, yeah.
I read that initial email, and I cringed because I knew what was coming.
Yep.
And then I read your passive-aggressive response. Because supervisors will tell you, whenever I do like scenario-based training with them, my mantra is, don't make it worse. Whatever decision you make, don't make it worse. And I read your response. I was like, Darren made it worse.
But I didn't say I didn't throw it away. I just had to put my spin on it.
And then it just went on from there. Yeah. So lesson learned.
Yep. That's not my first time. I threw Captain Dolly's food out one time.
Take a page from former Officer Hunt and former Sergeant Belknap. When you have the urge to clean the fridge, send an email notice.
That nobody listens to.
Before you actually go in.
But at least then it's on paper that you gave a date and a time.
Yeah, give them a couple hours notice of the impending.
When you can't close the fridge door, then there's an issue. That's like one of those things where, like, you know, you have to take an emergency step. and it's just gone.
So you're
that's angry dad syndrome at that point.
That email thread generated a very interesting conversation in my office because in our office or suite of offices in the joint offices there's a small mini fridge in there. Ironically, it's the fridge I bought to take to college when I went to Williams. It's been following me around ever since. And every several weeks, the office staff and I will decide to get lunch from another downtown partner, Patrick's Pub. And I always order the same thing. It's a cup of clam chowder and an order of wings. And doctor up my clam chowder, and I have my clam chowder, and then I eat some of the wings. I can never finish the order of wings. So the wings go in that fridge. And consistently, I have to be asked about 7 days later if they want me to throw the wings out because I never remember to take them home with me, and I never remember they're in there on Monday.
Now, see, Darren, you could have a meeting about a policy based on a fridge.
A meeting about a meeting.
We could, a meeting about a meeting about the fridge.
Yeah. So listen, so we talked way too much about me. So now I'm going to ask you some direct questions. We're going to skip over whatever else questions you had for me.
Remember that we have to end this episode a little bit early.
Yes, we will. Well, you got 10 minutes.
You got about 10 minutes.
You got 10 minutes. So when you joined, what was your vision of when you were going to retire? What was your vision of where you were going to be in this department?
So just to be clear, remember, when I joined the Pittsfield Police Department, I had no plan to stay with the Pittsfield Police Department. I only went to the academy.
You were going to use them?
Because I had aspirations. Well, they knew. Right? They had hired me with this.
Yeah.
So I came home to Pittsfield because I had aspirations of being a federal agent. My friend and mentor was with DEA. He recruited me to go to DEA. And I graduated from college in 1993. And in 91 or 92, DEA implemented a hiring freeze. And they wouldn't take you if you weren't military or former law enforcement. And so I needed to get some experience. And so I was taking tests all over. I took New York State Police. I took Mass State Police, Connecticut State Police, and a couple other municipalities. And then I got the opportunity to go to the academy for Pittsfield. It was home. It was going to, you know, I could save some money. And so I took the job planning on being gone within the first 2 or 3 years. And I went through the process with DEA, and I didn't make it. I don't want to get into that today, but there was some stuff with my former brother-in-laws, and I didn't make it. So I came back from the meeting with my DEA recruiter, and I immediately went to my lieutenant at the time, Bruce Hugglebone, and I was like, hey, lieutenant, because nobody had a plan for me that I thought of. And Bruce said, you know, I need to know if you're going to stay. And I said, well, as far as I know, now I'm going to stay because these opportunities are gone. I was selected for Border Patrol, and I couldn't pass the eye exam because I hadn't had the surgery yet. So Lieutenant Hugglebone took me from his office to Captain Spezzaferro's office, and they said, okay, you know, we've been holding off on this because we knew you were planning on leaving, but I did have some experience as an instructor already at that point. I was a rock climbing and rappelling instructor. I was a scuba diving instructor. I had been teaching the SRT as a civilian. And so they called me in and said, we want you to become a defensive tactics and firearms instructor, but we're not going to sign off on this unless you tell us you're going to be here for a while. And so I made a game day call. I said, absolutely. And I spent about 10 weeks that year in instructor schools, getting spun up. And so at that point, that's when I kind of had the, in my vision, I've talked about this, I'm going to make sergeant in 5, I'm going to make lieutenant in 10, captain in 15. And then I kind of knew, because I had a relationship from community policing with former Chief Riello, I knew that he had a plan and a timeline. And I figured at some point after I made captain, he was probably going to go. And in my mind, I was going to go with him, right? Wherever he decided to go be another chief, I'd follow him. And so I made sergeant in 5. I made lieutenant a little faster than I anticipated. And I made captain I made captain in 12 years. Mm. And so,
and a lot of that's timing.
Yeah.
Right. When you have people that are retiring or moves or whatever it is. So it's.
And so I went upstairs as a captain. I voluntarily took an assignment to admin because now I knew, you know, the one thing, I had a lot of operational experience, but the one thing I didn't know anything about was the administration and finance side. And if I ever wanted to be a chief somewhere, I needed to round that out. So I stepped out of operations, you know, I didn't want to, but because I wanted to do it for career development. And same thing. I was like, you know, I'll work for Tony for, you know, 6 or 7 years. He'll make a decision what he wants to do, and I'll go with him. Mm. Right, go as a deputy. And it was 6 months to the day after I made captain that he called me in his office. And 4 weeks after that, he was gone.
Surprise.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. So we got 5 minutes left. So I'm going to ask you a tough one. So I, through my Special Olympics, have a great relationship with Chief DG.
Yeah.
Out in, see, Middleborough. Now retired, I think, but then went and took another job and came back. But so when he was doing the assessment test, we were chatting and you know, about what it takes to be a supervisor, and, you know, like the, you know, he didn't give me any hints to, hey, these are the questions we asked, but he said, hey, when's your chief retiring? Now, this was a while ago, and I said, well, I don't know. He just recently became the chief, and his mantra was, you really should only be a chief probably a maximum of 5 years. Given the fact that you now have more than 5 years on, what would you say to that when it comes to, especially with how quickly environments have changed and the look at police, would you do it the same?
No. Okay. So when I became the chief, the average time of service for a chief in the Commonwealth was 3 to 5 years. Now, that's not a solid average, because there are outliers. You know, mm-hmm. There are small town chiefs that have been chiefs longer than I've been a cop. So you kind of have to truncate the edges. But former officer Dwayne Foisey, Captain Foisey, came into my office my first, it would have been December 1st, 2007. And he looked at me. He was a union guy, and he looked at me and he said, congratulations, you now have to do at least 2 years more as the chief than you did to get in here to make my maximum retirement, right? Because I technically I shouldn't have gone until 2025.
Mm-hmm.
But if I had to look back, if I, you know, me today was talking to me in 2007, I wouldn't have taken the job. Not because I wasn't up to it, but because it's a strain. I mean, being a cop is a strain, but being a police chief is an entirely different type of strain. And it takes a toll on you physically and emotionally and psychologically, mentally. And I've been honest in the last several years. I've been in therapy. I've, you know, had some health challenges. It's a job. At the end of the day, it's a job. I'm not going to die for that badge. I would die in service to my community, but not just so I can keep wearing that badge. And so I would tell aspiring, and I've said this to several chiefs, have an exit strategy, and if you love the job, start looking for another chief's job, right? Nobody's indispensable. Don't make it about you. One of the reasons that I was able to stay longer and as long as I did was that I've spent a lot of time over the last several years developing the command staff to take on more and more responsibilities. And I was talking to my therapist yesterday. You know, I'm looking forward to giving up the government phone, because I don't like getting woken up in the middle of the night for the call-ins. But the reality is, I haven't had to go out on a call-in except for on a homicide in several years. And that's not an accident. It's because of the professional development work we did to empower the command staff.
And I'm sure that's not easy.
And it, you know, it's,
because, you know, even when you went out, you know, you're not, although it's a desk position, right, administrative position, you did a few years ago start going out on Fridays, you know,
tried.
Just to go out and patrol. You tried. Listen, we'll give you that you tried. It was odd sometimes to see you out there. We're like, what is the chief doing? Stopping? Why is the chief on my call?
My favorites were when I would go in on the midnight shift at 4 a.m. and I wouldn't go to the, station. I would get up at home and just mark in on the radio. Show up on a call at 4:15 in the morning.
We're like, Chief, yeah, now you need to go back to your car. Well, that's awesome. I know we got to get going, so we can kind of just give a couple last minute pardons here, and
And to our viewers and listeners, I apologize. I have a hard stop because I have another appointment I have to get into at 10 o'clock.
So, and I got
to
go fill up the ice cream truck.
We're going to walk out of here a couple minutes early. So, but in the couple minutes we have left, plans for the weekend?
This is probably one of the first weekends I'm going to relax, but I'm going to work. So,
yeah,
we have a couple of events. Actually, we have Jeff Jam on Sunday.
That's right.
Yeah. Yep. So both Saturday and Sunday, I will not be in the ice cream show.
I'm going to make it down to Jeff Jam. We've got family coming in.
Yeah.
Dave, plans for the weekend?
Got Memorial Day parade on Monday, live on PCTV.
Nice. Yes. There our motorcycles will be back today, so we will be there.
And I'm going to get some training in, maybe shoot a few arrows because I picked up a new hobby this month.
Oh, gosh.
And spend some time with the baby. And we've got,
are you going to like hang like a, you know, like the guys, they hang like a wedding band and you got to shoot the arrow through it? Okay.
No. I'm just lucky to get it in the target right now.
I can't imagine that you're just going to just shoot, for, you know, just, hit, you've got to have some kind of
there's
skill in there.
There's a plan in place. All right. So for our viewers and listeners, thanks for tuning in. This has been another new live episode of On Patrol with the PPD. For everybody, have a great, happy, and safe Memorial Day weekend. Take a minute on Monday to remember our fallen. Until next time, be happy, be healthy, be safe, but most importantly, be kind. We're 10-8.